Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texit Coin. And that Texit Coin today, October 1st, 2025, is sitting right at $4.94 USD. I tell you, they're out there hashing at about 400 gigahashes per second with that mining operation out there in the great state of Texas. And they have signed up 34,391 people to take part and participate in that mining. If you want to get in on this and get a mind share yourself so you're not left behind, you want to get a seat on this rocket before it takes off, because once it's gone, it's gone. Be sure to send an email to texitmines@gmail.com. That's T-E-X-I-T-M-I-N-E-S @gmail.com. Include that word palm, P-A-L-M, in the subject line to make sure to get that discount. But go ahead and send that email and they'll get back with you and give you lots of information so you can get in on this Texit Coin. All right, folks, enjoy the show.
Hello there and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We are grateful to be back with y'all again here this morning. Hey, I'm right here as usual beside Professor Barlow. Good morning, sir. How's it going?
Outstanding. I could not sleep last night thinking about the guest we were going to have on today.
I tell you, we have got a guest today. Every episode, I'm like, oh, best guest ever. You know, every time. We just keep going up, climbing up the ladder. Just like that Texit Coin, our sponsor, right? It's number go up technology, and that's what I like. And that's our trajectory here on this podcast. And I tell you what, today, we have got a great guest. And this guest today, Blair Updike. And I first came across her on Instagram. Uh-huh. You know, you can find all kind of neat stuff on Instagram if you look in the right places, right? And you know, I'm kind of biased in the algorithm to Florida stuff, uh-huh. right? So I'm looking at Florida stuff, and a lot of that is Florida man, which we talk about on this podcast quite a bit. But we do find some good stuff, and I'm really thrilled to have Blair Updike as a guest on the show. She's an 8th generation native Floridian and a representational oil painter whose work captures the soul of the Sunshine State. And I'm talking from our landscapes, our cultural icons like crackers like you and me, Doug, and cowboys and Seminoles, poignant portraits honoring the heritage, you know, both the European and the indigenous heritage of Florida. She's a former mayor, I believe. We're gonna get into some of that, of Highland Park. And a fierce conservation advocate, just like we are.
The second mayor we've had on the show.
Yeah, we've had two mayors.
No, three mayors.
Three mayors. Yeah, right. Yeah, the mayor from Cedar Key at Clam Bass. But Blair.
Mayor of Tube Town.
Yeah, mayor of Tube Town. But Blair's activism, it really isn't just in her politics. It really comes through with her art.
It does.
Her artwork, just, you know, a picture says 1,000 words, right? Every brush stroke that Blair does is really working to preserve the authentic spirit of Florida right there on the canvas. She, you know, we can commission her, Douglas. She could do like a portrait of you and I. You know? we could dress up in some old attire. But her work is really, really preserving our state's heritage. And what a pleasure. Blair Updike, welcome to the show.
Nice to meet you, fellas. I wish I was on the porch.
I tell you, it's a great day. You know, we're a little bit north of you, I think. And, you know, fall's already here. We had a palm frond hit the ground yesterday. And we're starting to see some license plates from Michigan and Pennsylvania now when we go to town.
Never be able to get to Publix again in less than an hour.
Yeah, you get all that done, you know, in August, because it's going to be busy here from then on. But hey, Blair, tell us a little bit about your history. You know, I mentioned a little bit about 8th generation Floridian, kind of like Doug and I, and you've got some interesting stuff you shared with me when we were kind of putting the show together. But tell us a little bit about that, your background.
On my mom's side, I'm an eighth generation Floridian. My family was from up near Madison, a little place called Pineta. And I always think that should be like a warning label because like, why did you come to Florida that long ago? Like, you're not right. So my mom's family goes back to there and also a little bit in Wakulla County near Wakulla Springs. Actually, they had a turpentine still there. And then my dad's family was actually from Oklahoma. He was a second generation American. His family came from like Denmark and Germany and Poland. And they moved down to Hollywood in the 20s after World War One. This is confusing because the ages aren't making sense probably about now. My dad was born in a tent they were living in Hollywood in 1926 while they were building their home. But my grandfather was down there managing the Hollywood Beach Hotel, which was one of those huge like 1920s boom style hotels down there. And then the hurricanes kept hitting and they were from Oklahoma and they're like, no way. And they had a secondary business building or making awnings and tarps and things like that. And so they moved to Central Florida to Lake Wales. And we've been in Polk County for the most part ever since. And he went on to keep up with the awnings and ended up doing picking bags and eventually invented the Grove Goat, which is what we use down here to pick up bulk citrus for juice plants.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of the background.
Wow, and he, that's awesome.
Because he was in Polk County so long ago, I get yelled at because I always say, oh, we don't have, I'm not really from a cow family, but my dad actually was a cowboy during open range days. So I have to go ahead and say it. So no one calls me later and is like, your daddy, he was out near like Kisso or something else. So my dad cowboy.
Oh, yeah. I tell you. So you've got some North Florida. And it's kind of interesting if you study Florida history and the European expansion, particularly English, German backgrounds, you'll see that it started in South Carolina, Georgia, North Florida, then on down into the interior of Florida, you know, later, like in the mid 1800s, by that third Seminole War, is kind of when it, so many of us have heritage up in Northern Florida. And like my brother Douglas and I, we were born in Plant City, but then our parents moved back up where land was a little cheaper to Central Florida. So we kind of went down and back up ourselves. So that's real interesting. You have that Madison connection up there as well. And I tell you, so I would guess then that you grew up in Polk County. Is that what you would say?
Yeah, I was actually born in Tallahassee, which is where my mom grew up, and lived in Monticello for a while. My dad was there running a business with my godfather, and then the business down here, he had to come back and run it again. He was like sort of semi-retired when I was born and was picking up other projects at the time, but we had to come back to Lake Wales when I was like 4 or 5. So I grew up in Polk County.
Okay, great. Yeah, so by 4 or 5, you're down there in Polk County, Lake Wales. And you had to, I would just say that in your youth, growing up there, certainly you had to be immersed in the Florida landscape. Something had to impact you artistically to motivate you and inspire you to do the work you do today. Could you talk about that a little bit? Like what were maybe some scenes that you painting and see that, you know, you remember as a child?
Yeah, I grew up, my dad, we didn't really own a bunch of land or anything. But my dad loaned somebody money and he said, since you can't pay me right now, I want to put my trailer out on your property and I want to be able to fish and camp every weekend. And so we would go out and stay on this little lake on the weekends out in the middle of a cow pasture and camp and fish. And my brother would chase armadillos unsuccessfully, like the things little boys do. We'd shoot Coke cans and whatever. So that was sort of my home experience. But during the summers, we would go back up to the Forgotten Coast area, we call it now. We had a house on Dog Island. So I had a lot more time up there on kind of a barrier island. And there's no people there. And so you could just walk forever. And I'd go out on the sand flats in the afternoons and look at all the critters. And so kind of a mixed experience. I also spent a lot of time in Shell Point and in Tallahassee, too, because my grandmother and my aunt were still up there. So,
Great. And so one thing I've always wondered, I am by no means an artist at all. I appreciate art. But I can't draw, you know, a stick man, you know, on a piece of paper. But I do obviously enjoy it.
Everyone says that.
Well, everybody
may
say
it. I swear all y'all can draw.
Everybody may say it, but I can assure you I'm being very accurate here. But so when you do an oil painting, and I know you've done some ceramics and other things as well, but specifically with these paintings you're doing of Florida, one of my favorites, I've looked through all your work, at least what I could see online and on Instagram, but I love the one with the fire in the pine mm-hmm. trees. And, you know, because I've done a lot of, I'm a wildlife biologist by trade. I've done a lot of prescribed fire work throughout my career. And it is a beauty in and of itself, right? When you have a fire and a mm-hmm. natural, and a very natural thing. A lot of people don't realize how natural fire is on the landscape. But when you start your work, like when you get to that blank canvas, do you already have in your head what you're going to do exactly, or does it evolve? And how long does a piece of work take? Is it, do you work on a piece of canvas for weeks, or is it just a matter of minutes? Walk us through that process. It's just interesting to me.
Well, I usually have about a million photographs and sketches and ideas to start with. And what I do is suddenly I have a burst of energy and I'm like, I'm going to lay out ideas today. And I might get out 8 or 10 canvases that day and match them up to the dimensions that I think make sense for what I'm half of this doesn't ever happen. But so I connect it to whatever sizes I'm thinking work for those images or whatever. And then I do sort of an underpainting to lay it out and just make sure I like how things fit on the canvas. I know people think that it's like drawing or something, but painting traditionally, you start a lot looser and then kind of, so it's really abstract. And maybe I just put big shapes with like a couple brush strokes on there initially, just to figure out like tree over here, clouds are going this way or things like that. And I might lay out 3 or 4 of those in a day, even like huge canvases. But it doesn't take me too long to finish a painting. Like I say a couple weeks, but that's a couple of weeks, maybe me working 3 or 4 days for a couple hours. I have 2 kids, so I can't do anything for very long in any stretch. So I come and go. But it doesn't take forever. It's just, and that's partly because I've been doing it for so long. And because I just don't worry myself a lot either. I think if I were like real persnickety about it, it would be a whole process and it'd take forever. But I'm just trying to get it resolved, not get it perfect. So,
okay. So what you're saying, you may have 3 or 4 pieces at one time, and they are all kind of evolving as you go then, right?
There are probably about 15 right now.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, because I'm going up to Thomasville in Georgia like mid-November this year for a wildlife arts festival. And so I have to get enough stuff that I kind of get a wall to myself there. And so I have to fill that with all sorts of wildlife art, which is not what I do all year. So there's sort of a burst of getting extra stuff done on top of the 6 paintings I already had started. So right. But yeah, there's a lot going on.
So you do a lot of wildlife, a lot of landscapes, but you also capture the various cultures and the cultural history of Florida. And you know, through all of that work, it really, again, you know, as I said in the introduction, it really speaks volumes. It speaks and tells the story of conservation. How do you feel about that? How do you feel like your art has played a role in both educating people about Florida's history and communicating, maybe to somebody, let's pick on our friends, the Yankees that moved down here. You know, they see this work and it, you know, instead of me, you know, in a clunky manner, trying to talk about it, you can speak volumes with that. Do you feel that coming through with your paintings? Touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, and that's part of why I do it and part of why I stick very specifically to Florida. Like I could go on vacation and go be like, oh, I want to go paint in Italy and feel fancy. But I have a very intense sense of loyalty lately. I even will kind of troll my friends if they post pictures from like North Carolina or something. I think art has always been there as like a storytelling medium from the beginning. And I think it's easier to absorb something if you think it's beautiful and intriguing than for me to sit there and spout information at you. And frankly, like even not just Yankees where I live, I hadn't seen a cypress tree Like, right. I'm in pasture land for the most part up on the ridge. Like, I hadn't seen a cypress tree for most of my life. I was like amazed by this because we kind of, people didn't used to get around as much as they do now. We didn't really have anywhere. There was nowhere to go anyway, unless you were going off somewhere to camp fishing or hunting or something further away. Like, we didn't have a reason to leave Lake Wales. We'd go to Tallahassee and get shoes once a year for Sundays or whatever. But yeah. But I think that it's just an easier way to absorb the story and get intrigued without kind of turning them off with things that maybe they don't understand or agree with initially. And I know, cause I run the Flora Gallery too, which is an online marketing account that's focused on Florida art and themes, but I try not to even bombard people with information there. Like, there's plenty of other places to get that. I'm there to be kind of the like soft introduction more than anything.
Now, I noticed one of the great things about your work looking at it, or at least what I've seen now, is that you have this way in which you paint that there's no doubt this this image or this view is in Florida, and that's very cool. It's mm-hmm. clearly not California. It's not Hawaii. It's not another similar place. It's not even Cuba. You can tell. Somehow you convey that in every image that it is distinctly Florida, a low, near sea level, hot. I just feel a lot of heat in a lot of your wonderful paintings. But I notice you concentrate a lot on citrus. You find an orange grove from a distance as interesting, which I do as well. Tell us why you favor citrus in your paintings.
Well, I'm in Polk County. So this was citrus country, not as much as it was. But that was one of the things I initially painted a lot because it was what was around me and what people were interested in buying on top of that. There's still a very high demand for citrus paintings, and it's not so easy for me to find good looking citrus. I'm a little bit more picky about it than some people because I know what it's supposed to look like. And so I'll be like, oh, look at them. They painted that tree with like, it's got greening and it's all twigs and like the fruit's undersized. How could they even release this? But somebody that's not a citrus grower will buy it, you know, like, but that's not where I live. I have to get it right. It needs to look lush. It's a tree. It's like a leaf crop. It needs to be really full and beautiful and actually have a lot of fruit on it. So it's slowing down for me being able to come up with those scenes. But it really was just what was closest to me is why it came out first, basically.
So tell us a little bit again, I have very limited knowledge on this, but tell us a little bit about the commercial aspect of what you do. So you sell your artwork, and how does that work? And you do commission work as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't have that figured out still. And that's part of why I started the marketing co-op, because I see in other places like out west, we have the Western art scene, and that is a huge deal. And people are, you know, selling paintings for $40,000-$50,000 for a 40-inch wide painting or whatever. We're not capable of doing that in Florida typically for a representational art, a painting of something. Now, if you were doing something and you're in Miami and it's abstract and it's something weird, you might be able to get that kind of money just because of the way market works. But so I'm in kind of a weird market. I'm fortunate that Publix Corporate is in Lakeland, so I do have people that can afford to buy paintings there. I partly just paint what I feel like painting. And if you want to buy it, here it is. I sell a lot of artwork through Instagram, but a lot of that goes to existing customers because they already know that they like what they got before and they know it's going to look good. So there's not this like unknown. A lot of times if people are looking for something larger, that ends up being a commission piece. Like they'll say, oh, I like that one you did at Tiger Creek. Can I get that in these dimensions, or the decorator will call me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I do portraits every once in a while, but I try to discourage people because they stress me out. So when you see all the portraits of like cowboys or things like that, those were not.
Make me look skinny.
Yeah. and kids are so hard too because they have different shaped skulls than the rest of us. They're kind of like turtles when they start out. But when you see the cowboys and stuff, that's not a commissioned portrait. That's me. Like, I've called a friend and been like, hey, can I come out and photograph you? Because I'd like to be able to display those. And then they end up usually getting them for free, or it goes somewhere else to be exhibited long term. Those aren't really commissioned portraits. Now, if somebody would like to stop being a cheap cowboy and hire me to do this, I would be happy to do that because I like painting all those scenes. But
Have you ever done the Cedar Key Arts Festival?
I haven't been there.
Oh, okay.
I avoid art festivals. So I used to do that initially because it's how you build a customer base. But it is like a lot of work and it's almost like a lifestyle. Like you almost really need to have a trailer and know how you're going to stay for cheap and eat for cheap. And I just, like, I have two kids. I can't be away all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to help me set up the tent? Like, so it used to be kind of like single couples without kids that would do that kind of stuff. And it's just a weird thing.
We'll certainly put links to your website and your Instagram. Folks need to definitely check that out. So basically, Blair, if someone went to your Instagram, they loved a piece on there, did they just private message you on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Is that how it starts?
Yeah, they just message me. And sometimes I'll do sales and, you know, post a bunch of stuff at once. But usually if it's up there and it doesn't say sold already, just message me.
Now, does it give the dimensions of the painting? Are you a big kind of painter, or are they small? Or
I am a big kind of painter that's not allowed to paint as big as I want. Like right now I'm doing a painting that's probably 48 inches wide and has like 12 ducks in it. You know, like if I left to my devices, that would be me. I'd be like all of the animals and as big as possible. But like that's not easy to ship or like deliver or anything. So I try not to be a big painter all the time is the answer, even though that's my preference.
Well, what about this? Now, I'm gonna throw a dirty word on you. It's a French word, giclée. Do they do that kind of stuff with your work, or how does that happen?
I do giclées. I'm so impressed you know this word already. So that's basically a print on canvas. So it looks a little bit more like a painting. But I'm not allowed to tell anybody about this yet, but I'm going to tell you. The Florida Gallery has a print site that does giclées. That's actually a curated gallery of Florida artists, including historic artwork. But it's not officially up yet because we're having problems adjusting the prices. But I think that would be really cool because you know that you're supporting a legitimate Florida artist that's been vetted, that we know they're not an awful person on top of it, and that they're actually a career artist. And right. You can buy directly from them. And some of the money goes back to the Florida Gallery and to All Florida, which is a not-for-profit conservation organization that we kind of like live under. So that's in the works. I wish it was done, but technology.
Yeah, that's great. Well, hey, when you're a guest on the Palm and Pine podcast, do not be surprised when we throw out these foreign words like giclée.
I was worried we were going to talk about aliens.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We have been talking about the Three-Eye Atlas a lot,
or the skunk ape up here. So.
Oh Lord, that's too far south, I think, for me.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm pretty close to Yeehaw though, which was like UFO territory.
Yeehaw Junction. Oh
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
Now, what about teaching? Do you teach art, and do you do any of that side of it?
During the winter, I teach classes at the local art center. Like once we call it painting and tacos because there's a taco truck outside and we like break and go get tacos because I refuse to teach at night. I like go to bed at 8:30. So I teach just basically during snowbird season so that it's a full class. But that's really the most of it. Every once in a while I'll do private lessons, but I get distracted too easily. So I can't take on a lot of stuff basically.
Does this art center have a name?
The Lake Wales Art Center.
Okay. Folks can find it.
Very original.
Class.
Very original.
It's a cool spot. It was an old Catholic church, like a boom mission style Catholic church. It's 5 miles from my house. It's nice because it's so close too, but it's a really cool building.
And how do people find out about enrolling if they want to enroll this coming winter?
They have to go to their website and say a prayer. I cannot help you.
So tell us what kind of stuff you have coming up here in the fall. Do you have any, you know, you've done so many exhibits and things like that. I think you mentioned one up in Georgia. What all's coming up for you?
Yeah, so I have Thomasville Wildlife Arts Festival, which is mid-November in Thomasville, which is I think they've been doing this 20 or 30 years, and it's in the old high school in Thomasville. It's this cool, like, three-story building, all wildlife art. It's more Southeastern focused. And that's like a week-long extravaganza. I don't go to everything there. They do like all kinds of stuff. But while I'm up there, I'll go around and paint kind of the panhandle because I have some break days. And then we have Orange Blossom Review, which is actually a music festival here in Lake Wales. I believe All Florida is sponsoring a booth. And we'll do a Florida Gallery booth there and have an exhibit up there. And then there's possibly a surprise thing coming up in DC that I don't know for sure. So I can't tell you yet. I'm like waiting.
You've been invited to the White House.
It's not the White House, but it is in DC. So I'm kind of, I can't officially say yet, but it's, we'll see.
Well, you should have been invited to the White House.
Yeah. What the heck?
Well, hey, Blair, you were nice enough to share a piece with us. We've got a picture we're going to throw on our website, palmandpine.net. So folks can go by there and check out one of your
pieces of work. Palmandpine.net. We'll put it in.
And we'll also have your Instagram and your web page, which again are just incredible. And I'm just so grateful that I came across it. Thank you, Instagram.
It's just incredible art. Everybody, you've got to check it out. It's just breathtaking.
I tell you, we're grateful that you are doing such a good job. Just as Douglas said, of Florida centric, and everything screams Florida, and it does it in a beautiful way. It communicates to everyone, you know, the beauty and what we have here that we can treasure and value and protect for the future. And we're so grateful for that work, and just wish you the best. And hopefully we'll get you, Doug. If Doug and I make enough money, we're gonna get you to, you know, do our portrait for us. And you know, we have no belly, and make that. And our hair needs to be a little dark.
Everybody gets a little bit of this.
We'll
put on these gray uniforms, you know.
We'll have our grays on, dressed gray.
I'm here for it. We can have like something in there too.
There you go.
Thank you guys.
Hey, Blair Updike, thank you so much. The pleasure's been ours. We're very grateful and wish you the best.
See ya.
All right. All right, folks, thanks for joining us and keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.